Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Throwback Thursday to an amazing conversation I had with Mr. Cal Krusty, just an incredible guy all around. I mean, he's been there, done that when it comes to negotiation. He's negotiated from the corporate world to the terrorist world. He has seen it and been there. Thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with Mr. Cal Krusty. You will too. Enjoy. Hey, Cal, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Mark, how are you?
I'm very well, my friend. Thank you so much for joining me on the show.
My pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, we've been trying to get together for so long now. I'm so glad we finally aligned our schedules. You're an incredibly busy man. I am also very busy. And so to finally get you on is a real privilege. And I certainly appreciate your time. You know, we've had a ton of former police and hostage negotiators, special forces negotiators on the show before, and having you on sort of rounds that out really, really nicely. Before we get into our conversation today, I wonder if you could just give the audience a brief history and background as to who you are, where you come from, and what you're doing right now.
Okay, thanks, Mark. I guess everybody always asks me whether I'm teaching at university or interacting with a client in terms of my background, but it's a little on the unique side. And some would say a little on the freak side. I would say that I probably started my background probably in terms of the foundation for being a negotiator in my early days of policing, where I was dealing with organized crime figures and trying to cultivate human sources or informants. And during that period of time, trust building, rapport building, and all that was probably 90% of my daily interactions with people in that particular regard. And then I went over to the former Yugoslavia as a peacekeeper at the height of the war in the 90s and found myself in the middle of some very complex negotiations where I was one of the several lead negotiators during the war in the early 90s for several tours dealing with prisoner of war, hostage takings, kidnappings, and dead body exchanges, which was a very intense, very complex negotiations. We'll talk about it hopefully later, what I describe as wicked problems and wicked type related negotiations. And I enjoyed it so much in terms of rewards and interest and passion. I joined the Canada's National Hostage Negotiation Program with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and ended up as the team leader for the Greater Vancouver area of the RCMP. And then I got involved and switched a little bit or evolved into conflict negotiations, dealing with a lot of community disputes with communities, First Nations, and I know many of your listeners are from the U.S., so with the Natives, including teaching at Quantico, the FBI school on that. Had the fortunate ability to, you know, take the FBI negotiation course, the Scotland Yard negotiation course. I got very involved in the protest issues, like nationally, internationally. And then in the mid-2000s, got involved in international kidnapping negotiations with the Canadian team on that and deploying overseas, doing negotiations with terrorist organizations overseas, as well as domestically in Canada, doing a lot of the local kidnapping and extortion negotiations. And then around 2010 or thereabouts, became the team leader for Canada for our international kidnap negotiations, and then transitioned rather than retiring, don't like that term, about a year ago. And now working with a group of former international negotiators and kidnapped negotiators called Interventus Global, and with a group of guys that I've worked with over the last couple decades from other countries that I'm currently working with and doing consulting on various types of negotiations, from conflict ones to international kidnapping ones to workplace type disputes.
Well, fascinating. It almost reads like a book, right? It almost reads like a novel, your background. I love that you dove into sort of the exchanges and everything that you had going on in your early days. I want to dive into, you mentioned something about a wicked problem or a wicked negotiation. What does that mean?
Wicked means complex. And a lot of times I see there as two types of negotiations. The very linear ones where you And I'm trying to think of an example where you walk in the store and you're going to buy a, you know, X, or go to an auction and you're going to buy X item, and it's a linear interaction between person A and person B with a fixed price, and you're trying to get a lower price, versus some of the ones which have been probably the majority of the ones I've been involved in, which have been wicked problems. And wicked problems would be those that named Coleman describes as 5% of the problems. And a lot of the negotiations, I think, that people get involved in currently, and just looking at some of the world events, whether it be the current issues in terms of Canada with the canola farmers and China currently, you know, layers of culture, history, psychology, politics, social issues, and that make it very, very complex. So 5% of the problems are considered wicked problems. A lot of the, say, the historic disputes within Canada with the First Nations, you know, much the same in terms of rich, in terms of multi-layers of culture, history, you know, my experience in the former Yugoslavia and Bosnia during peacekeeping, much the same thing in terms of very complex, very fluid, very dynamic cases. So that's what I mean by wicked.
Interesting. I have to ask, what is a dead body exchange?
Yeah, that's a unique one, especially from a kid coming from Canada that showed up in the middle of a war, and the next thing, you know, within a month found himself involved in these negotiations. Basically, they are those people that have been killed during the course of the war. A critical part for families in the warring factions is to exchange the bodies back to the other side, to the opponents in the war. And failing to do that creates and amplifies the conflict. So it's one of the escalation processes in the wars to return the deceased.
Oh, wow. That's very, very cool. Something that you and I have chatted about in the past is, you know, a lot of my guests talk about negotiation tactics, and that's really, really important. And obviously, you need to know how to use them. But you're also a strong advocate for other considerations as well. Why do you think that good tactics are not enough?
A couple of reasons. First of all, I think tactics are hugely important, you know, whether it be active listening, whether it be rapport building, whether it be trust. And I know you've had, you know, some of the people I have a ton of respect for, like Gary Nestner, who is one of my mentors, Jack Cambria, who I've met and who just oozes in terms of his personality when you meet him, in terms of rapport building, trust. He's just a nice guy. Same with Gary. I believe all those things are critical, and I always use them. I always study them. I always try to get better at them. But I also sometimes know the other side of the table sometimes has equally those skills. And when you're dealing with wicked problems, with the complexity of it, and you know, you're dealing with group dynamics quite often, not just one person across, sometimes I think it takes a more robust, resilient type of response to be effective at achieving your interest and your goals during the course of negotiations. So I think just through my experience, you know, and starting back in the war where I had no training at that particular time, since that time, you know, I've gone to law school and I've studied it. I have my master's of law in dispute resolution, negotiations and that. But at that time, I realized that, like, I looked at the concept of, you know, through observations, the importance of strategy, the importance of structure, i.e. the teams involved in it, because that's how I first got exposed to negotiations, was through teams, not just one-on-ones in terms of like in a formal setting. So in that regard, I just realized there was a lot more to it. And in probably about 2005, I had the fortunate ability to be invited to a group that was funded by a U.S. company called JAMS, which is, I think my understanding is probably kind of the go-to kind of mediation arbitration organization in the U.S. that does a lot of the big mergers. And they were doing a think tank called First Generation or Second Generation Negotiations. And they basically brought what I considered go-to people in the field of negotiations. I think Lewicki was there. One of my profs, Michelle LeBaron, who's like exceptional in the area of culture and negotiations, was there. Another guest that you had here, Mr. Wheeler from Harvard, was there. And there's about 30 or 40 of us. And we spent about 4 or 5 years traveling around the world to different geographic regions and different cultural settings and brainstormed what they called negotiation 101. And we're trying to take it to the next level by creating the second generation negotiations. And it became apparent on day one, and I got brought in, and I say this, I think is alluded to in my intro, as a little bit of a freak because, you know, they had known I'd spent a lot of time in war zones and very difficult, complex situations. And they invited a couple of us that didn't have some of the same academic background and standings, but had some very unique pragmatic experience to join the room. And one of them was one of my current associates, Dr. Lira, who was the negotiator, one of the lead negotiators for the U.S. Army in Iraq. So there was himself, myself. Jack was invited, but he wasn't able to make it to some of these. But in that process, right at the outset, we reviewed, you know, and everybody that was kind of the go-to expert, including Mr. Wheeler, Michelle LeBaron, and a few others, were talking about presented to the group in terms of being the go-to experts in different areas, whether it be bargaining, interest-based negotiations, cultural considerations and negotiations. And we set that as kind of the baseline for what currently was considered best practices in the world of negotiations. But as I sat there after that first day out of a four-year process, I recognized that a lot of those things that was introduced as generation number one weren't always what I had learned from the field of practice being the most important, most considerate, or most important considerations in negotiation. So in that, I think that leading to today's discussion, there was a lot of dialogue thereafter for 4 years looking at three additional dimensions to negotiation, which we're hopefully going to talk about here. One, strategy. Two, structure. Three, self. And those were three big things that I learned out of that four-year brainstorming kind of think tank group and being exposed to some super bright people. And that coupled with my own kind of self-reflective practice, reflecting on what worked, what didn't work.
So that's super fascinating. One of the key questions that obviously is going to come up is if we don't have a really in-depth strategy and we're not approaching it with something that sort of everyone has bought into, or as you mentioned, everyone sort of obviously has one objective in their mind, but they may be viewing it through a different lens. What's the risk of not having a strategy?
A couple of things, Mark. First is, I think in terms of developing a strategy, what it allows you to do is to think not one or two steps ahead, but I think it forces you to have the mental gymnastics to explore 5 or 10 steps ahead. And if we look at kind of the current dynamics of taking place in the world with a lot of our negotiations that are taking place, and I think the US and Canada in particular, you can see it. You know, we're dealing more with negotiations with partners, trade partners, conflict situations, and that with other cultures that are far more probably strategic than us. And their effectiveness quite often is the long play and being super strategic in it. And their planning process allows for fallback options to keep the speed and flow and directions of the negotiations moving forward with different options, exploiting opportunities by having an array of options, moves, the deployment of tactics, concessions, and that to move forward in the direction to meet their interests. So without having a strategy, I think, you know, one would sometimes maybe, for lack of a better term, seize up, stall, and be in a difficult position to maintain the speed and direction and flow of your own negotiation focus to meet your interests and that. And I say that in a very, I use the term horizontal way, you know, in terms of like horizontally meaning going up or forward in your negotiation process. But I also say in terms of the strategy that it's multidimensional, and that includes horizontally in terms of not only moving forward in your negotiation process, but I asked one of my peers today before the thing, I said, hey, you guys asked me a number of years ago if I would be the team leader of our Canada's kidnap team. And I asked him, well, why? And in terms of my self-awareness, what he said was, Kelvin, you always thought strategically, not only moving forward, which I just described, but he said also in terms of laterally or horizontally, in terms of having a strategy that included out of the box type considerations. So during the brainstorming and the planning session, in terms of going, here's your objectives, so you know what they are, but spending the time to kind of go, hey, not just looking going forward, what about thinking out of the box in terms of critical thinking, innovative thinking, and having a plan that has all that stuff and taking the time to have that plan. And I think it just gives you a broader base diversity in terms of like rapport building, trust building, all the important tactical kind of considerations and building that within your plan. So you're using all the tools in the toolbox, including different types of processes, you know, whether it be shuttle diplomacy or whether it be interest-based negotiations, whether it be bargaining kind of tactics and that, whether it be social influence, rapport building, or persuasion tactics that are all included in terms of moving forward. So that's why I think strategy is important.
You mentioned something that I find super interesting, especially when it comes to international trade negotiations, when we're negotiating with trading partners who may have more of a longer term focus. Do you think that one of the weaknesses that we in North America, meaning Canada and the US, sorry, Mexico, do we have a short term focus when compared to our trading partners? Are we focused too much on, you know, what happens now versus what may happen in 100, 300, 500 years from now?
My experience is, and also in terms of following the stuff currently in our group, which, you know, Interventus Global has a group of diverse ethnic, cultural backgrounds and experience in it, is that I would say that we play checkers and many play chess. And I think in terms of, like, you know, many of the current situations right now, I think that's why we're seeing in many situations that the negotiation processes aren't overly effective, particularly in these conflict situations. In addition to not being strategic in it, I would also kind of highlight being somewhat insensitive to some of the cultural dynamics as well.
Interesting. So we're not strategic enough and we're not long-term enough. We don't think long-term enough. That's nicely into my next question around your second S, which I think you called structure. How does structure fit into that overall negotiating process? What do you mean by that? And can you give me an example?
Yeah, just going to take back one step and then go two steps forward on the structure part. I think one of the most important lessons I learned in terms of that strategy and being strategic was one of my professors at law school, I remember, compared Eastern negotiation styles to Western negotiation styles and described our Western style as being 20% analysis and 80% action/response, and describe the Eastern approach as, you know, that classic 80-20 metaphor as being 80% analysis, including the planning and the strategy, and 20% action. And I think, you know, they say there's three types of negotiators, somebody alluded to once: strategic negotiator, pragmatic one, empathetic one. I think I'm probably more towards the strategic. And I think that's the lesson that I've learned through all my experience, is that importance of strategy in terms of looking at everything in terms of planning, analyzing as 80%, not the 20%, and doing the reverse. And I find it more effective. But anyways, back to your question on structure, if you could just rephrase that again.
Yeah, the question was around how does structure tie into this? And what do you mean by structure? Do you mean like the structure of sentences or the structure of the overall negotiation? What do you mean by that?
So everybody talks about strategy and tactics. And I think I learned this through my interaction with the military operations, is they highlighted to me in my interaction with them. And I was once asked to review the Canadian military negotiation program back in like 2007, and it really crystallized a gap in the thinking that I had, and I think many others have, is they think at three levels. They think at tactics, they think at strategy as well, but they think of operations, and operations is the most critical and important part of it. And when I reflect on all the literature out there on negotiations, everybody talks about strategy, everybody talks about tactics, but how do you effectively execute that? And that's where it comes into operationalizing it, like actually executing everything, all your strategy using a structure is required, in my opinion. And that's what I use as it's kind of like the transition, you know, on the spectrum. At one end of the spectrum, you have your strategy. At the other end, you have your tactics. But how do you operationalize all that stuff to get then to your outcome, right? So the thing called the logic model, which is structure plus tactics, or structure plus process equals outcome. And kind of using kind of a somewhat modified version of that, the missing element of it is that structure. So in that think tank that I talked about, what I found was a lot of negotiators referred to themselves as being the most critical part of the negotiation process. But in that second generation think tank on it, we realized that it wasn't just the negotiator that was important, but as my own experience saw, it was the team environment. It was the structure that we created through our strategic alliances, our subject matter experts, advisors on negotiations, our training programs on negotiations. And in this particular case, quite often when I talk about structure, I'm referring to like team negotiations. And when I say team negotiations, not to be confused, I mean structure could be as simple as going into a workplace conflict negotiations and taking a second person for you. Because when you're speaking, as you all know, it's hard to listen. Being a second person as your listener and building that structure within that would be highly effective. You know, it helps in terms of your own self-reflection, your own self-awareness. It helps in terms of your brainstorming power, your critical thinking power, you know, developing options, innovative thinking, and all that stuff. So I look at when I develop a strategy, and then looking at what the objectives are, having a structure, i.e. a team, and then in addition to the team, having other elements, whether it be, hey, who's going to be my coaches? If I run into a problem, who am I going to use as a mentor or an advisor? Looking at, when I look at the objective, going, hey, you know, there's some unique cultural dynamics. And I take this time just to say, when I talk about cultural dynamics, I don't mean to be confused by ethnic dynamics, because cultural dynamics is much broader than that. So I'm looking at, you know, if you're dealing with a certain organization, organizations are known to have their own cultures and their own personalities. So, you know, IBM may be different than Apple, or Apple may be different than Microsoft in terms of a personality and that. So building in, you know, subject matter experts in a team that understands those nuances and that for that cultural diversity is key. And then having the resilience within the team to do it. And just when I talk about that structure, i.e. that team, which can go from, hey, just having somebody that you're going into that workplace conflict that's not even going into the room with you, but you've consulted with before you go into the room and can be your sounding board thereafter, to going the extreme where I've done negotiations, say with G8 protesters, and I've got 20 negotiators on my team that I can rely on, and they have diverse backgrounds that I can leverage in the negotiation process. So that's kind of what I'm talking about structures a little bit.
Fascinating. The other thing that you mentioned was to be aware of the self, or your third S. Is this sort of like a, you know, that know yourself sort of thing? What do you mean by the self?
So when I look at, for lack of a better term, the model that I quite often rely on, which is that strategy plus structure plus process plus tactics equals outcome. If I do that as a mathematical equation on a line, I usually put a big circle around it and I go self, because the self, in my opinion, is, and I'm talking about, you know, the emotional part of the negotiation. So I know, like, everybody looks at, particularly the hostage negotiator, people that you've had on, I think really bring the importance of the emotional element of the person that you're negotiating with, and the importance of, you know, active listening and being in tune with the emotional kind of activity that's taking place in the interaction. But I also think probably what I've learned in terms of my own experience is the importance of the self in terms of the negotiation process. And I think where it kind of came on to me probably the most was, and it was again sitting with Mr. Wheeler and a few others in this think tank, was it was kind of one of those aha moments. And he may have been being a super nice gentleman, but it was an aha moment for him. Because we were in the think tank and we had broken out to groups, and Mike Wheeler was one of the guys in my 5-person group. And here I am kind of sitting here as kind of a kid originally from Winnipeg, which most of your listeners may not know of. Hopefully they know of the Winnipeg Jets. But in that little think breakout group, the facilitator, a fellow named James Cohen, came up to Mike Wheeler, myself, and the other 3 or 4 people in the group and said, Kelvin, I noticed you're noticeably absent from the dialogue in this group, right? And I was kind of going, I'm looking around the room, they got Lewicki in there and all these big guys like Wheeler and that. And I'm going, wow, like super impressive, knowledgeable guys. And I said, well, I am. And I said, but I don't necessarily agree with everybody, but I don't know how to articulate it, right? And I'm saying this right in front of Wheeler. And here he is, kind of one of the gurus in negotiations at Harvard. So they prompted me to say, well, what do you think? And I said, well, everybody's talking about the negotiator, for lack of a better term, magical kind of powers in terms of manipulating people or influencing people through smooth talking and listening and all that. And I said probably the most difficult, complex negotiation I've ever been in was in the former Yugoslavia, in the war, dealing with these kidnappings and body exchanges, you know, with huge high level intensity, historical stuff going back to the Holocaust with some of the negotiation issues. Like, it was really, really kind of an intense, complex negotiation. And I said at that particular time, I didn't even know how to spell the word negotiation, let alone know any tactics or strategies about it. Like, it was the first time I got thrown into a formal setting that was really, hey, your job is the negotiator, mediator, peacemaker in this case. But I was super successful in it, and we achieved some great results in it. And when I reflect on it over the last couple of decades, what it was that made it successful was basically just the importance of relying on yourself. And that means, when I talk about the principles of compassion, respect, honesty, integrity, and it was those, adhering to those principles through life experience and through being, you know, what I learned from my parents and growing up, in terms of those were my values, that I just adhered to it and, you know, applied some maybe life lessons that I've picked up along the way that allowed me to achieve what I did in those particular cases. So I think quite often we forget in terms of that emotional piece of tapping into our own emotions. And I know, again, that we have listeners from both sides of the border on this. But I remember an elder from First Nations community I was dealing with in a major dispute. It was a major road blockade taking place in Canada. And this elder looked across the room at me and she said, you know, Kelvin, I've just met you today, but if I can give you one kind of tip in terms of us working through this problem together as an elder from the First Nations communities, and it's hard to do on this podcast, but she pointed to her head and she, with her index finger, and said, less of this, and took her finger and pointed to her heart and said, more of this. And I think that kind of solidified what I thought was my whole life experience in terms of negotiations is, you know, tapping into who you are, what you are, knowing your strengths, knowing your weaknesses, and adhering to the principles that you believe in. That was kind of one of the major kind of lessons I learned. And also through my education, I recognized that's a key, critical, important. And I think some of your guests, you know, like Jack Cambria and other guys, I think, you know, that's probably their strength is themselves and knowing who they are, as well as knowing who their weaknesses are, which I've got many, and I try to compensate them throughout the processes as well.
Yeah, I think often enough, we don't do enough self-reflection on ourselves. I mean, that Latin saying of know thyself, I think in this case really ties in super well. Because if you have the ability to know yourself, know what your true motivations are and what you're trying to do, it makes your negotiations actually a lot easier because there's no second guessing. There's no second guessing motivation. You're not just reacting from a set of sentences that someone's given you to say. You're using that with the motivations that you have. And I think that in and of itself is a huge separator for people who become great negotiators. But I think further to that, it only develops over time. It's not something, unfortunately, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, that can happen at the beginning of a career. This is something that gets developed over time. Would you agree with that?
Mark, I'm touched because I get a flashback of several decades of intense negotiations. And I think the most defining part, you know, as listening to what you were saying, was they come probably at greater speed of learning through failure than they do through success.
And interesting.
In terms of my own life experience and type of negotiations, I chose out of interest and compassion to pick some extremely difficult negotiation work, i.e. with terrorist groups, war zones, etc. But coming with that came a lot of failures. And I think it was that failures that have enhanced, I think, my own learning, my own strategic thinking, and the three S's, i.e. the structure is going, hey, I've got some weaknesses. I know that I may be, according to my peers, like super strong strategic negotiator, probably not a bad pragmatic negotiator, probably got some gaps when it comes down from the feedback I've got being the most empathetic person. So, you know, when I look at the structures, I do build that stuff in there to go, okay, what's my strengths? I know I've got strengths, But I've never met a negotiator that can be a strategic negotiator, a pragmatic one, and an empathetic one at all at the same time. So that's why tying this issue of self to structure and even strategy, the three are all interconnected in that. And that's why I specifically build diversity within my negotiation teams, whether it be formally or informally, you know, as such as a coach or mentor, but formally in terms of like selecting people that are diverse for me in terms of experience. I remember that I was in a terrorist negotiations here, and I'd be a little discreet where it was, but I had a new guy on the team, and we were probably one of the most intense couple of days of negotiations I had been in. And it was a deadline for an execution of a hostage coming up within several days. And I had flown over to be with some of the young guys in the negotiation process because it was their first time in a situation. And I was anticipating bad things were going to happen. And I wanted to be there to provide them that professional support, but also the emotional support if things went wrong. And I remember going into the meeting at the embassy, and the young fellow who was first time deployed in one of these situations was sitting there talking, and the ambassador was in the room, and everybody was in the room. And I was listening to him talk, and I just got off the plane, I think, the day before. So I was a little jet lagged and taking a more passive role in that meeting to catch up and learn. And I listened to him, and he sounded very similar to myself in the terms of his articulation. So I leaned over to a young guy in the middle of the negotiations or in the meeting here. And there was about maybe 10, 15 people, pretty serious, intense meeting. And I said, you're never, ever going to get deployed on one of these things again, right? And I was a team leader and his boss and that. And he looked at me with his eyes and said, like, what did I do? I said, you think, you talk, and you act too much like me. And I said, we need diversity, right? So in a very kind of nice way, I was telling him, like, I really respected what he had to say, but I want that diversity also in the team in terms of going, I know I have my weaknesses at the table, and I need that other person to kind of complement my weaknesses as I reflect on myself. And I saw him being just too similar to me that he's probably better to pair up with somebody else on that. So that's kind of the importance of that structure and how do you mitigate the gaps you see in yourself.
Brilliant. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. Fascinating stuff. I especially liked your three S's. I think brilliant way to sort of wrap negotiation up into a digestible format. Just for the listeners, go over that again. It's strategy, structure, and self. Really great conversation, Cal. If people want to follow you online, what's the best way to do that?
LinkedIn is probably the easiest and best. You know, I am an associate to a company called Interventus Global, but we try to be somewhat discreet in terms of our social media profile. But LinkedIn is probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Brilliant. And for the listeners, just so that you know, I will link out to Calvin's LinkedIn profile. Again, Cal, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. Have a great day. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thanks, Mark. And I thoroughly enjoy your show and spent most of the last night listening to a lot of the other speakers who I enjoyed as well.
Awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. All the best.
Thank you.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.